I'm Craig Wilson.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 84, for Friday, 17th of May, 2013.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the place where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at plus.google.com/plustechcentral.
Or on Facebook at facebook.com/techcentralza.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about the big Google I.O. keynote and BBM coming to iPhone and Android.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser.
That's right. But first, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Shoo, Mr. Henderson, your desktop is dirty. Dirty desktop, dirty mind, isn't it? Shame, let me clean here. Clean up, click. Wipe hard drive, click. Ach, now that's better.
Don't get ambushed. Call for backup. Get Recovery Vault from Vox Telecom, your off-site hosted backup solution. Store and save all of your data online and in real time for half the price of an on-site server. Recovery Vault from Vox Telecom. Backup for your business. SMS 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Welcome to Talk Central. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Duncan.
How's it going?
No complaints for a Friday afternoon, as usual.
Great. Yeah, it looks like it's going to rain, which is very strange for mid-May.
Indeed, but the weather's just been peculiar all round of late.
It has been, yes. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about the week's technology news, and there's been plenty of it. A lot of it coming out of Google's I.O. Developer Conference in San Francisco on Wednesday night.
Indeed, so much coming out of that, right? Mm. Just Google firing on all cylinders, as I think you put it earlier. They're really just making leaps and bounds on so many fronts. It was, what, a three-hour keynote?
3.5-hour keynote, if you include Larry Page's Q&A at the end, which went on, for, I think, for about 45 minutes.
It's just phenomenal. I mean, the fact that they have that much to announce, and it didn't even feel like it was stuffed with filler. It was back-to-back announcements. It was just amazing.
It was quite riveting, actually. I was glued to my PC screen for most of the evening.
And of course, they set the bar quite high with the last keynote, where you had people wearing Google Glass leaping out of airplanes and all sorts of things. So the fact that this one managed to keep you riveted says a lot about it.
Yeah, indeed. And it was interesting to see Larry Page coming out after announcing just a day or two earlier that he was still struggling with his throat condition, with his vocal cords, and he really didn't. Did you have a chance to hear that section of that?
I saw snippets of it. Yeah.
His voice was really sounding quite rough, but good to see him out there. And it certainly was a choreographed event. I think Google has really figured out how to match the Jobs note. It was certainly apparently it had over 1 million people watching it live on YouTube.
Just amazing.
These things have become big events.
Indeed, almost like concerts, really. I mean, that people care enough about these to keep watching them.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, so there was some big news coming out of that. We're obviously not going to be able to deal with all of it in a short podcast, but...
No, because there's so much to cover.
The Next Web did a really great summary, I think, of some of the key announcements. Craig, maybe we should go through some of those. Interestingly enough, this figure of 900 million Android activations and now 48 billion apps downloaded. Apple, of course, had this big announcement this week that it had just completed or had its 50 billionth app download. And here's Android coming along just behind it. So
indeed, never get its heels. And of course, it hasn't had nearly as long in the, or quite as long in the app market. But then, of course, there are far more Android devices because so many people make them, as opposed to Apple, which is the only seller of its own. I mean, if you look at the Apple figure, that sort of 50 billion apps, considering how few people, I mean, globally speaking, have iPhones or iPads, that number's still astounding. You get a $200 or even $100 Android device, but you don't get a $100 Apple device. It's just incredible, those sort of numbers. But yeah,
certainly the average number of downloads per Android devices must be a lot lower than the average per on your average iPhone.
I think that too, yeah.
But interesting numbers here. 2.5 billion apps installed every month now on...
Every month.
What does that work out to? About 30 billion a year. Exactly 30 billion a year.
Just phenomenal.
Yeah. So what are some of the other big announcements there? We've got a Samsung Galaxy S4 running stock Android, which I think is quite interesting.
I think that's a great move, because I know a lot of people said that their favorite thing about the Nexus devices, these of course being Google's devices that it puts out with Android on it, and that tends to have what they call, you know, the vanilla or stock Android. I think this is great. I know you, like me, are a fan of sort of the stripped down basic Android.
Well, I've been using Cyanogen Mod, which isn't the Google interpretation of Android, but it's very close to it.
No, indeed, indeed. But to actually have it on the S4 is, I think, a great move. Yeah. I'd certainly consider it if I was in the US and it were an option.
The biggest advantage, of course, of having native Android running on the S4 is that you get all the updates. So.
Indeed, and you get them at the same time as Nexus users, which is normally what Nexus users get to rub in other Android users' faces.
Exactly, yes. interesting the price as well. $649, which certainly puts it much below what South African operators are charging for this device.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it here for starting at 8,500 Rand.
Yeah.
That's certainly quite a markup. Even if you go at 10 to the dollar, that's still 2,000 Rand more.
Now, this is being sold directly via the Google Play Market. So I wonder if there's a version of this device that will work in South Africa, or this is a US-only model. It'll only work with US spectrum.
Right, I suppose it depends which bands it supports. Mm-hmm. Yes.
My guess is the US service.
Yeah, probably locked down to the... Well, because the other problem there is the different operators, right?
Yes.
You could have, working on one operator doesn't mean it works on the other. So perhaps you have to get one specific to Verizon or Sprint. I wonder. Of course, the other big news for us, at least, again, not things we can use, but exciting news is the new Google Play Music All Access service.
Yeah, also limited to the US.
And this really is Google's foray into the streaming market. Obviously, it's looking to compete with the likes of Spotify and what's it called? Audio and Simfy and. Yeah, exactly. And, I've been waiting with bated breath to see when Apple's going to launch its streaming service. But
there was no doubt that Google was in a race here to beat Apple to market.
Indeed, and has done so. Mm. And, of course, I suppose Apple's motivation in part is that it still makes quite a lot of money on sales from the iTunes store and doesn't necessarily want to cut those off. But
I'm not sure about that, because that's never been Apple's model in the past, unless something's fundamentally changed.
Because Apple's always been happy to cannibalize its own market.
Exactly.
You know, as with iPhones cutting into iPod sales, Apple's always had that sort of foresight to say, well, we'd rather cut into our own profits than have someone else do it. And
yes, exactly.
And here Google's certainly gotten the head start.
So both of us, Craig, have tried to see if we can get the service to work here in South Africa using tunneling VPNs and various other.
Indeed, the problem bits seems and bots, to be but, you seem to need a US billing address. That's the wall I've hit.
But, like a US credit card?
Yeah, or just a US bank account linked to a US billing address.
I see.
That's the problem is because even if you try it with a local card with a different address, it then queries. I assume it's querying the banks, and it says no, your billing address and your card details do not match.
So I guess we'll have to wait for Google to launch Google Play Music All Access vouchers that they sell in US retail stores. At which point we'll be able to test the system.
They certainly, assuming that it doesn't have to check your IP every time you use it. Now, of course, with other services you can get around this. You know, I've been using a US Spotify account that way, and the bonus there is their fully paid premium $10 a month account allows you to access it, as they put it, it allows you unlimited travel time, so it doesn't mind that my IP says South Africa. But we'll have to see how the Google one works. Of course, they could have come up with a shorter name, but the other thing I do like about the service is that in addition to access to the whole of Google's library of music, you also get the opportunity to upload up to 20,000 of your own tracks.
That's already been there, of course.
Those peculiar, I know those bootlegs you have of various sucky sucky performances that you may not be able to find on Google.
Giving
Music.
Away all my secrets here.
So I think that's a nice touch too, that you can also sort of augment their online catalog with your own collection, and then be able to stream your own collection from elsewhere as well.
The only criticism I have of that functionality in the Google in Google Play Music is that you have to upload your entire collection, and it doesn't offer a match type service like Apple offers.
Right.
So you literally have to upload your entire collection, which in my case was it's many tens of gigabytes.
Sure.
Across a DSL line, it took rather a long time. but and other services like Google's Music service and Xbox Music as well, sorry, Apple's music service and Google, and the Xbox music service as well, which is supposedly still coming to South Africa, offer this matching service online where you, where it detects the music you have and then simply populates it without you having to upload huge volumes of data.
Sure.
What else came out of the announcement that you found interesting, Craig?
Oh, well, of course, the other big one that I know we've both been fiddling with a little bit is the mapping functionality. Google announced various updates to the maps. Of course, they're not readily available, and I know you were fiddling with it earlier today and found it a little bit buggy. You have to apply for an invite to play with it. But
it didn't take long. I applied for it one Wednesday night, shortly after the keynote, and I had the invite in my inbox this morning, so on Friday morning. So.
Right. They're obviously keen to have people testing it. Yeah. I've asked for an invite to have a look at it too. And the little I saw, it certainly seems to be quite a lot snappier in terms of sort of moving around and zooming in and out. I mean, our connection speed hasn't changed since the last time we fiddled in Google Maps.
It's looking great. It's looking. They've really done a lot of work on the design of it. They've got rid of that big white block on the left.
So yeah, that column. Yeah.
And now there's a little search bar, Google style, I guess, where you just type in what you want to do. So, for example, if you're looking for a Indian restaurant in Johannesburg, you just type Indian, Johannesburg, and it'll bring up a map showing you the location of all the Indian restaurants in Johannesburg that it's aware of.
And of course, if you click on any of those, you'll then get reviews and this sort of thing from Google users.
Street view of it, photographs, if photographs are available. Interesting. It's kind of taking on Foursquare in some respects, I guess.
Indeed. I mean, they've really, you've got to feel a little bit of sympathy for other companies that are trying to sell this sort of data, because the bigger Google gets, and particularly when it comes to these reviews and things, these reviews, aren't generated by Google. They're generated by users, and simply it's really Google just tying the data to a pin on a map.
Yes.
But as this increases, you've really got to feel for companies for whom this is their bread and butter, because really, how can you compete with the scale of Google? In due course, one does wonder. I've seen some various articles today talking about the alarm some people feel for how much data Google is getting on us. But as you said before, for the time being, as long as the services continue to be good, and until we've had a bad experience, I'm quite willing to continue trusting them.
So the other thing I thought, which was really cool, that came out of the Google I/O event on Wednesday, was the new photos. Did you see some of the touch-up stuff there?
Amazing that this is all just sort of built in now. Yeah,
automatic stuff. And I thought that photos thing was a real challenge to Facebook.
Yes, absolutely. This is one of the things we've seen too, is imaging and imagery related services have become such a key part for so many people. From all social networks, everyone allows you to post pictures. I've seen Google's had more and more ability to edit your photos online, and with its Picasa app and so on. And you're really getting to the point that if you're just a sort of enthusiast who just wants to upload your happy snaps, you can really do some pretty powerful editing with very little effort. And it's really kind of made this more accessible than having to have an understanding of Photoshop and so on if you want to do things.
Sure, but the auto—I think they call it the auto awesome feature. It's really cool. It
sort of combines a number of pictures, existing pictures, and sort of picks the best bits of them.
Yes,
a bit like an HDR image in a sense. HDR images allow you to get sort of greater dynamic range, more darks and lights.
Yeah.
And this is the same sort of thing. In the early days of HDR, you'd take three photos, overlay them over each other, and then use software to pick out the highlights and the midtones and the darks. Mm-hmm. And here you've got it all sort of automated for you.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing I found really interesting out of this event was the new Hangouts. They're calling it, NextWeb describes it as a new unified cross-platform messaging service for iOS, Android, and Chrome.
And what that really means is they're killing Google Talk, and it's now going to work on all platforms.
That's right. Google Talk still works, although I noted the other day that you can no longer have off-the-record conversations. It said that the Google Talk app specifically,
yes,
on my Windows machine, said to me that this application no longer supports off-the-record chats, and all future conversations will be archived on email. On Gmail. So interesting development. I don't think that Google Talk app is going to see any further development. I haven't had a chance to play properly with Hangouts yet.
No, I haven't either.
So I'm not sure yet if it's going to be a suitable replacement for Talk. There certainly isn't going to be a Windows app, at least not yet, which concerns me.
Indeed. I suppose for the time being, it'll probably be built into web browsers and things the way it is down the side of Gmail.
Which is a little annoying because I don't use... I hardly ever use Gmail. I use Gmail all the time. But
not the actual service.
I use it through IMAP in Outlook or... occasionally through the web, but usually through Microsoft Outlook.
I guess the idea here is to encourage you to keep a Google Plus window open during the day or similar so that you can have the feed down the side and so that you'll engage a bit more with the network.
Yeah, and I suppose it's not really in Google's interest for me to be using Outlook to connect to Gmail.
No, indeed.
Because they can't serve me any ads.
No, that's right.
Interesting, but Google's been needing to do something for a long time around instant messaging. I think it's too early to know how this Hangouts play is going to work out.
This is the other curious thing, is I haven't used Google Talk, the proper actual Google Talk client, or the one built into Gmail, and I do use the web interface for Gmail. I haven't used either of those in years.
Yeah.
I've always used third-party clients.
Yeah.
Or for as long as there have been decent third-party clients around. You know, on the Mac, I use Adium.
Yes.
But I actually haven't used the client. I don't really care for it. As long as the sort of API works and other things can get the data, I'm not especially concerned about a standalone client from Google.
Yes, yes. Anyway, we'll have to watch the space. Craig, there's so much else we could talk about on Google I.O. this week, but I think we need to move on to the other news of the week.
Indeed, unfortunately, we don't have 3 hours yet.
Yes. So let's stick with another international story for the moment, and that's around BlackBerry and the fact that they announced this week that BBM is coming to iPhone and Android. What's your take?
Indeed, a very interesting move. So my initial take was, well, it's a bit like admitting defeat, really. WhatsApp has won. If it's gotten to the point that BlackBerry feels that it needs to open it up to other platforms, then I felt, at least at first, that this was some sort of concession. But perhaps it's not the worst move. I mean, we've said time and time again, whether it's apps or, you know, whatever the story is, you want people to be able to switch devices and still use your services, right? And this is what's made WhatsApp in particular so popular. WhatsApp runs on just about everything. It runs on Symbian, you know, all of the major platforms. And that's the best thing, because it doesn't matter what device you pick up, you plug in your credentials and it just works. And I suppose that there is perhaps some hope that BlackBerry could achieve the same thing. I mean, at least here, particularly amongst the youth market, BBM remains an incredibly popular service.
Sure.
And if you look at their numbers in terms of usage, you know, there's certainly a lot of people spending a lot of time on it. But my worry is that
they're also using WhatsApp, and you talk to these guys who still use BBM on BlackBerries, and they're using both. It's not BBM exclusively anymore, which it was a couple of years ago.
Indeed. And that's sort of my concern, is I just wonder if even giving people the option to use it on multiple devices, I just wonder if they would. I mean, you know, I use an iPhone at the moment, and I can't say I have any intention to download BBM it, for the simple reason that all of the people I know who use BlackBerries, with whom I communicate often, are on WhatsApp anyway.
No, exactly. No. My take on it was that BlackBerry's hand was really forced here, because
Clearly they're not making money off it anymore. It's not a sufficient differentiator anymore. It's not the reason people are buying their devices.
Exactly. That's the key thing here. It's I think what's happened here is that people are no longer buying BlackBerry for BBM specifically, which they were in the past.
Indeed.
And because of that, there's no reason BlackBerry shouldn't open it up to cross-platform, to other platforms. So
I think it's a brave move too, because at the same time the company now has to go, well, that's not a differentiator anymore. Really, we've just got to compete on a sort of level footing with everyone else.
But
it's not level, right? Because they don't have Samsung's marketing budget.
Sure. So. But it was forced on them. It wasn't. I don't think they had any other option. Yeah, they had to.
You know, personally, I think had they made the same move a year and a half or 2 years ago, it could have had quite a lot more impact. But at the moment, there's also so many people clamoring for attention in this sort of cross-platform space. You know, you've got Samsung's chat on, you've got WeChat, you've got WhatsApp. You know, it's already becoming quite a sort of crowded space. I feel like perhaps a year and a half ago, it may have been a bit more revolutionary, whereas here it's a little bit, it's a little bit late. And, but we'll see how it plays out for them. I will certainly fiddle with it when the apps appear in the various app stores.
Sure. And the good news is you don't need a BBM PIN, apparently. You can just use your BlackBerry login detail.
Right. Your email and password, yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's time for our winner and loser of the week. Who have we got for the winner this week?
I think we've racked our brains over this, and I think we have to pick Google as our winner this week. amazing announcements coming out on Wednesday night, and the share price touching new record highs and pushing its market capitalization above $300 billion for the first time.
And he said, you know, at this rate, if Google keeps the trend and keeps growing and Apple keeps declining, we could see Google actually overtake Apple within the year.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. There's less than $100 billion difference in their market caps now. Google is now firmly ahead of Microsoft, which is dispatched to third position in terms of market value. So, let's watch this one closely. But
it's going to be fascinating to see what comes out of the Apple Developer Conference.
Sure, that's a month away.
Happening in a month's time. I think that will be very telling, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a big shift in share prices when that announcement happens.
Sure. Anyway, Craig, you want to talk to our loser of the week?
Sure. Our loser this week is Telex. And some of you may be forgiven for going, I'm sorry, what? Telex is the old sort of electronic telegram service or telegraph service. And we found out this week that Telkom looks likely to close its Telex department and reshuffle some of the staff because it's simply not making money anymore and there are so few people using it. I frankly, before I looked into this, didn't know anybody was still using it. But it turns out it's still got some uses in the maritime industry in particular, in part because it's a little complicated, but each sort of Telex receiver has a unique identifier, and part of the way the process works is that when you sort of agree to receive a Telex, it sends a small signal to the sender, and that signal is a sort of confirmation of who you are, and so it provides a sort of certainty that you were messaging the right person and provides a sort of confirmation of receipt. And it forms part of some of the regulation around maritime sort of safety laws. And so for a long time, it's remained necessary for the shipping industry because it's one of the regulations in case of emergencies to make sure that should you send out a distress signal, people will know that it's coming from you and people will pick it up because they are obliged to listen on the right frequencies.
So how many people at Telkom were still involved in this Telex business? It was around 26 or so.
26, yeah, that's right.
26 people still involved in Telex. It's quite extraordinary. Now, they're going to be moved into the 1023 Directory Inquiries Center.
That's right.
So these staff worked in the Jeppy Street Post Office, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, yes. And now they're talking about moving them to the Directory Inquiries Office in Ormondi.
It's quite remarkable. Maybe we should actually take a tour down there before they actually get moved out of that facility and just to go and talk to them and see who's there.
Well, they disappear, yeah. And it'd be amazing to see the equipment that's used and sort of how much traffic they actually still get.
Yes.
Anyway, it's amazing. Well, what's really interesting about it, it's just an amazing technology. You know, when you think 100 years ago, this was absolutely cutting edge. And one of the interesting things I read suggested that part of the reason Telex was developed was after the Titanic disaster, because Morse code was limited by a few factors. One of them was how much traffic could actually be carried on the frequencies that were used. And this resulted in people not always using the same frequencies. And that's part of the Titanic problem, was that their signal wasn't picked up soon enough because people weren't listening for them, essentially. So this was one of the things that prompted it. And 100 years ago, this was just completely amazing that you could send a message from one place to the other. You didn't necessarily have to be a Morse code operator to be able to decode it on the other end, and you knew that you'd gotten it through to the right place. And 100 years down the line, this suddenly seems absolutely archaic. And it's just amazing as a sort of indication of just how far we've come.
For sure.
Anyway,
amazing. In a world of smartphones and Google Maps, there are still Telex operators out there.
Yes.
Excellent, Craig. I think we need to end it there. We've run a little over. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za, or you can connect with us on Twitter at @TechCentral. Until next time, from Craig and myself, cheers. Cheers.